Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour three rolling along this morning on a throwback Thursday. Mike Puma's going to join us, New York Post. We're going to talk about the Mets. Kind of captivated our attention lately. They're winning games. They're having fun. Not only is Edwin Diaz coming out to Nacho, but Daniel Vogelbach is going up to the plate to Milkshake. They're beating everybody that they've seen so far, especially in the second half of this season. They got a better record than the Yankees. But are they still the Mets? We talked to Steve Lyons not that long ago, and Steve Lyons didn't put a lot of emphasis on managers, but nevertheless, I wonder how much Buck Showalter has influenced his team, or maybe not. Maybe it's just because they have an unbelievable collection of talent. But I remember saying this at the time when Steve Cohen bought the team. You really want your owner to be a fan. You really do. Especially in baseball where money matters a lot. It's really interesting. The Broncos just got sold for $4.65 billion. And it's a lot of money. And it's been sold to Rob Walton and a group of investors. And Rob Walton, as a Walmart heir, is worth $70 billion. And it means that the Broncos are owned by one of the richest men in the world. And it also means that the Broncos have deep pockets. But, you know, it's still salary cap. It's still, you know, there's some limitations that you can do with that. But in baseball, there isn't. I'm not saying that the Broncos being owned by a very, very, very wealthy person isn't going to have an impact. It will. But nevertheless, in baseball, it really does matter if your owner has money to spend and is willing to spend it. And I said, I remember when the Wilpons were done, I remember thinking Steve Cohen is a Mets fan and he just bought one of his favorite teams and he's a billionaire. And they went out and got paid a lot of money for the talent, Francisco Lindor, Max Scherzer. But they've also got guys on the team who they brought up through the system like Pete Alonso. The Mets are a team that is fun to watch, and it's a couple of things that have come together rather nicely for them. But how much does Buck Showalter as their manager matter, or does it? So we'll get that answer. Deshaun Watson is starting in the preseason opener this weekend for Cleveland when they face Jacksonville. Should Cleveland be concerned about that and the image that it is portraying? Also, I don't know if you know this tonight, but the Field of Dreams game will be going on between the Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds in Iowa, but it's not going to happen next year. We'll tell you why coming up next. It's Hour 3 on a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, 1991 Throwback Thursday. This is familiar. Who's this?
Kiss.
Kiss, that's right.
See, now, I think this is an older song.
Right.
But it did find its resurrection, much like Bohemian Rhapsody did because of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Sure, that's right. Yeah, all right, very good. So 1991. Did we find if Pearl Jam was on the charts in 1991?
Well, here's the deal, right?
Because Rosemary was asking for Pearl Jam.
Yeah, right. You know what?
And you know, this show, we like to play the hits.
Play the hits of our fans. And
that's right.
You know what? Here's the deal, Rosemary. Pearl Jam, the live album, was released in summer of 91. It didn't really hit mainstream until summer or until like, you know, midway, spring, summer of 92.
So when did grunge come into being?
It was
when
like
did
91.
Nirvana hit? 91,
92?
91,
yeah. Okay. And I was, because I was doing some research, I was reading up. I'm like, when did Pearl Jam? Because I remember it vividly. But aside from that, real quick, I do like to appease our fans. So yes, Pearl Jam will be played coming up.
So Rosemary, hang on. Here's your long distance dedication.
Yeah, we'll stay alive somehow.
Exactly.
I guess Pearl Jam was widely hated. I don't remember that.
Were they?
Yeah, Kurt Cobain.
Oh, my God.
Kurt Cobain really didn't like that they were a part of the Seattle grunge scene.
Oh, really?
Because he felt that they sold out.
I played that cassette so much, I wore it out. Oh, I wore the 10 album. I played it over and over in my car that summer of 92. I remember it was the summer of 92 because I remember where I was living. And I remember that particular summer because it was before my senior year in college. And I remember just tearing that cassette to pieces. I was playing it back and forth in my car the whole time.
Now, I know it's not on the same level, but I kind of feel it was similar. That you either were, like, much like the you were a Beatles fan or a Rolling Stones fan, it was like you were a Pearl Jam fan or a Nirvana fan. But I found myself being fans of both.
Yeah, I kind of found like it was both. I was just kind of I kind of liked the music.
So but I also remember there being a dividing line. Like, if you liked Nirvana, you couldn't like Pearl Jam and vice versa.
Well, you know,
but everyone
some of
could
us
like Soundgarden.
Some of us were hanging on to the metal years of the late 80s a little too long.
Yes.
Oh, no. 92, man. Summer of 92. One of my favorite summers.
Dust out the old flannel.
Ah, yeah. That's true. That's right. So, Rosemary, we will have some Pearl Jam.
We'll have some Pearl Jam. It might be a year too soon when that song really hit its popularity, but the album, 10, was released in summer of 91.
All right. Very good.
So, I guess it qualifies, right?
Field of Dreams game tonight in Iowa, the Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds. This was kind of fun last year.
Yeah, I liked it last year.
When the Yankees played the White Sox, that was kind of fun. It was, you know, it was neat. It was a cool setting. It's this
Kevin Costner coming out again.
It's nostalgic. It had
is
all that
Ray
feel
Liotta's
it.
Ghost actually going to make an appearance?
Oh,
no. Is that too soon?
That's too soon.
Too soon,
too
maybe?
Soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, too soon. Nevertheless, this game actually is very unlikely to be played next year.
Why?
Okay. Why? Because there's a new ownership group of the Field of Dreams Park, if you will, led by Hall of Famer Frank Thomas, and they are building out the complex. So they're going to be there's going to be a lot of construction. There's going to be a youth baseball field and a softball complex and construction.
So they're
going to
make like a full World Series destination.
Full destination.
Youth World Series destination. That's awesome. All right.
So they're building this out. So construction is going to be gone. It's going to start next year. Later this year, I should say, but it's going to be going on through. So it's a big project. It's a really, really big project. And they said, well, we can't really accommodate what you're looking for because we want to get this project up and running. And we can't just pause it. You know, once we start it, we have to finish it.
Right.
So it's unlikely that the stadium where the ball field is and all the amenities that it would need to have a Major League Baseball game are going to be compromised during the construction until they build it out. So eventually they will be back, but next season they won't have it. And what I found interesting was Frank Thomas, when he was putting this all together, was describing it. And then he just looked at the camera and said, and she'll like it too. And I thought that was kind of a cool way to bring that back into, you know, to the limelight. So I was kind of excited about that. So, nevertheless,
You know what? That's an okay reason because I do know, like, especially with youth baseball, youth softball, that that destination World Series destination thing is a real thing.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
a reason why people go to Destin, Florida all the time. There's a reason why people go. Was it Pigeon Ford? Is that
Pigeon Forge?
Pigeon
in Tennessee.
Forge. Yeah. In Tennessee, those are all Branson, Missouri. Those are. These are literally destination because they have a great baseball facilities. Reno.
Right, sure.
I just came back from Reno. The fields there were incredible.
Yep.
But it's there's no other reason for it except, hey, you know, once, twice, you know, during the summertime, we're going to hold several World Series events. And these are the places that you go to.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you get at Iowa to that list, oh, my God. I wish.
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
I want my son to go.
Yeah,
I need to go see it now.
And this is the thing, right? I mean, you can, if you bought this, like Frank Thomas in his group, right? You can go, it's kind of a cool little tourist attraction, and then we have this one Major League Baseball game every year, but Major League Baseball may decide not to come. So you have to take this and you have to do something else with it. You can't just pray every year that Major League Baseball wants to play a game here, and you can't live off of that one thing. You have to have something. They're building something that is going to be utilized a lot, that's going to bring in revenue, but it's also going to be utilized in a lot of different ways. They're bringing the game back, but they're saying, hey, look, we bought this. We want to make it something that it's not right now, but we want to make it into something. And next year, unfortunately, the construction is going to put a pause on us hosting a game. But when we get this done, you can come back to even a better facility. It's still all the things that you want, the cornfield, all of that.
Yeah.
But we are putting some money into this, so it becomes a complex, like you said, that can bring in all of these youth tournaments and these youth events, mm-hmm. as well as a Major League Baseball game once a year. So
I hope so, because great. I'm still waiting for the... You know, that old throwback game of Diamondbacks versus Rockies.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm looking forward to, right? Bring back Travis Lee and Charlie Huff.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Bring back those guys.
Luis Gonzalez.
Yeah, bring back those guys. Yeah, Jay Bell.
The one I do really would want to see, especially in old-time uniforms, you know, going back to like the Brooklyn, New York days, would be the Dodgers and Giants. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Can you do that? That would be great. If you can bring back the Dodgers and Giants and put them in New York uniforms, Brooklyn Dodger uniforms, yeah. I think that would be incredible.
That would be incredible.
I hope those organizations, I really do, and I don't know, because, you know, you move and you go, no, Los Angeles is our place. That was then, this is now. I hope they would still embrace the Brooklyn in them, right?
I hope they do. I mean, I've had
Polo Grounds in them. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
I've bought Brooklyn Dodger hats. You can get Brooklyn Dodger gear.
Oh, sure,
gear,
you can.
You know,
sure. But would they want to wear a uniform that says Brooklyn on them?
I hope so.
Wear a Brooklyn hat to play? I would love it. I would love it, and I know the members of my family would love to see it.
Yeah,
it
I mean, the Giants are a weird group, so I don't know if they would embrace it. But I know my Dodgers would.
Yep, exactly. So I think that would be great. If you could see a Brooklyn Dodgers uniform and a New York Giants uniform and in the old colors and the old B and the sort of
the orange and the blue.
Orange and black NY on the hat. I'd love it. Our good friend Chris Mad Dog Russo is a big Giants fan. He would probably enjoy that too. Right? I say good friend because we had him on twice.
Yep.
If you're on the show twice, you're a good friend.
You're a good friend.
Even if you have no idea who we are. You're our good friend.
He knows who we are, Tony.
That's right. But nevertheless, I think that would be great.
Yeah, because be so cool. For me, I'm not ready for it to end yet.
No, me, that's fun.
I really enjoyed last year's, what was it, White Sox Yankees,
yeah.
But this year's what, Cubs Guardians? No, it's
Cubs-Reds.
Cubs-Reds, thank you. Yeah, exactly. I don't know why I was blanking on that. But because we still need Red Sox, Guardians. We still need. I mean, do you go Guardians or do you go Cleveland Indians?
Yeah. Well, I think we've passed that one.
That's. You have to go Indians on that one. You know, and I want them to bring. Like, I want Oakland to embrace some. You know, their heritage too, and go Kansas City A's.
Sure, exactly. That would be
Philadelphia
fun.
A's. Or,
no,
you know,
it would
be
really fun.
I mean, you got to do that type of thing, and you give a chance because I mean, most of these baseball teams. Came from someplace else, like Milwaukee. What are they going to choose?
Yeah,
Milwaukee can go. It's like, well, should we go Boston Braves or what?
Yeah, see, that would be cool if you did that. That would be kind of neat. I kind of like that idea.
Or the Braves. I mean, Atlanta Braves go Boston. Or Milwaukee.
There is something. Baseball is really weird. It's in this position. Like the NFL does these throwback uniforms, but you know, whatever. But baseball really has.
Yeah,
they want to get this youth right. They want to go after the youth. They want to create a game that youth that young people are attracted to, and it has problems within its structure of doing that in an age of TikTok videos and 5-second tweets and all that other stuff. But at the same time, it has this nostalgic fan base that even though many people weren't alive when the Brooklyn Dodgers were around, it's enough to go. Yeah, but it still would be kind of cool. Yeah, it still would be kind of neat. It would still, yeah, sure, I wasn't around during the 1910s, but it's neat to see the old uniforms. It's kind of cool to see the old style. Why not? Just let's do that.
Well, I mean,
so baseball's kind of in the middle of that.
You know, like you said, I mean, there's a certain nostalgia with baseball that the other sports just don't have.
Yeah. I'll give an example. I saw over the weekend the Phillies were honoring Pete Rose, and they were wearing those baby blue Phillies uniform. And I went, that's awesome. Like, I love those. And again, it's like the throwback Thursday jerseys of the NFL, but it's like, I like that. I think that's cool. I'm glad Milwaukee has re-embraced its glove logo. I think it's one of the best logos in all of sports. It's amazing, and I'm glad they've re-embraced it. You know, there's some of these things that, yeah, you want to change things up. You want to create a new jersey. You want to create a new logo. You want people to rebuy your gear. But at the same time, nostalgia does sell. It really does. And you know, the more I keep thinking about this, like, Giants-Dodger thing, I think it would go well. I think you could get a younger group to say, yeah, I'm 19. I'm nowhere near the Brooklyn Dodgers. But you know what? That look is cool, and they're part of my Dodgers. I'm going to buy a Brooklyn Dodgers hat or a Brooklyn shirt.
And listen, I mean, you know, the bottom line is the Dodgers and the Giants would do this. Because what does that mean? Jersey sales.
Sure, of course it would. Absolutely.
That would be their driving factor. It isn't, you know, wouldn't it be to appease to the fans of, you know, it's like, oh, let's give them some nostalgia. It would literally be like, guys, how much money do you think we can make off these jerseys?
Absolutely. Buy a Brooklyn jersey. You know,
get a Brooklyn,
from the game.
Yeah, Brooklyn jersey with you know, Mookie Betts' name on it.
Yeah,
Come on now. Cody
that'd
Bellinger's name on it.
Great. It'd be wonderful. Look at us coming up with great ideas.
Yeah, and I, you know, but if,
some of them, some of you out there rolling too. Your eyes, I get it, but trust us, it would work.
But the other thing that is also kind of unique to the Major League Baseball that you don't really see too often in, you do see it in other sports, but not, I don't think, nearly as on the scale, is that you have teams that have moved from one city to another. I mean, I highlighted the A's.
Yeah, there's a lot of sorting out. Yeah.
Didn't the A's start in Philadelphia, then went to Kansas City, now they're in Oakland? It's like, right. You can go ahead and bring out Philly A's, or you can go, you know, like the Braves, Atlanta Braves. You can have the Atlanta Braves play, and they have to decide, do we want to be Milwaukee or Boston for this
absolutely.
Game?
Absolutely, absolutely. Totally right. Like, we're going to be talking about the Mets in a bit, you know, and that's to when that team came together. Everybody knows that the color scheme is for the Giants and the Dodgers, because it wasn't like that. Those weren't fan bases that were going to just go, all right, I'll just be a Yankee fan now.
I'll move to California as well.
Right, exactly. they were not going to just go, all right, it's the only
Yankees.
Team that's left.
Come
of course
on.
Not. And plus, and don't get me wrong, I mean, New York's big enough to have, they had three teams that were big enough to have a second one, right? No problem. And so it was only going to be a matter of time before baseball was going to put another team in New York. But it was also to say, look, where are these fans going to go? Their team is 3,000 miles away now, and you got to give them a team. And that's, you know, that's the Mets are the collection of New Yorkers back in the day that were never going to root for the Yankees, ever going to root for the Yankees. And so you keep that up a bit. And I think there is something about the history of the sport that could sort of come out in that Field of Dreams game. So, Frank Thomas, get on your construction. Get rolling with that. You've got all the energy now that you have. So get on that. Finish it up so we can get this back in 2024. So, all right, coming up, we'll talk about Deshaun Watson starting in that preseason game. And then we will talk Mets baseball, our guest from the New York Post, as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 10 minutes from now, Mike Puma is going to join us in New York Post. We'll talk Mets baseball. Exciting times at Citi Field right now. We'll get the lowdown of what's going on there. Deshaun Watson is going to start for the Cleveland Browns in their preseason opener. That'll be against Jacksonville. And Jacksonville, it's not their preseason opener because they played last week in the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. But nevertheless, preseason. Aaron Rodgers said playing a series in preseason is a waste of time. I think most quarterbacks feel that way. But if you're Deshaun Watson, you get on the field because you haven't been on the field in quite a while. So, you know, you're on a new team. You got a little bit of rust. Play a series or two, probably just one. But nevertheless, it to me, I said this earlier, I've separated this decision into two things, right? One, just solely on football. Forget all this stuff on the outside, just football. This makes total sense. He hasn't played in a year. Get him in there. Yeah, you run the risk of injury, but whatever. Play a series. Just get his you know, sea legs going again. And then, you know, take him out, and then that's it. So I get the football aspect of it. PR-wise, this is a terrible look. Now, if you're Cleveland, do you want to approach Deshaun Watson, who you're paying all of this guaranteed money? Do you want to approach Deshaun Watson as somebody mired in this appeal and could be suspended? Or do you want to treat it as if we haven't heard from the NFL yet, so we're going business as usual? And since business as usual means we would have played him in this series regardless, we're playing him in this series. The NFL, we don't know the timeline yet of when the NFL is going to come down with whatever appeal they have. Or I should say Peter Harvey, who's been assigned this appeal, is going to come up with his decision. And if I'm a betting guy, and I'm not, but I'm thinking that Peter Harvey goes the NFL way and gives them the year. Now, he could also say, just to prove that I'm not just the NFL shill, I will do 12 games. Right, just to prove to everybody that, no, I'm not in the pocket of the league. I'm not doing what they say, since this is pretty much a one-time deal and I don't work for the NFL. So it's not like I'm trying to keep a paycheck. They're paying me this one time to hear this one case. They don't like it, too bad. I'm going to do 12. Or he might say, hey, you know what? I have a lot of respect for Sue Robinson, and I'm not going to upend her. I'm going to keep it at 6 games. He could do that. Again, he doesn't work for the NFL full time, so it's not like he could say, yeah, and don't ask me again, because I got a lot of other things I'm doing in my life. Whatever. But if you're Cleveland, how does this look? I think that's the problem. Now, a lot of teams don't care how it looks, right? A lot of teams, coaches do this all the time. Coaches don't care what is being said about them on social media. They don't care what it means on, you know, like what did Bill Belichick say? Face Instabook, face chat. Remember that? He doesn't care. You do what you do. You make the football decisions, and if people are screaming, people are screaming. But this isn't about starting one guy over another. This isn't playing a guy in preseason and people are worried about getting hurt. It's beyond that. Those coaches normally don't care what people think about their decisions around preseason because it's football related. You shouldn't play that guy. You should play that guy more. Give that guy more reps. He should be the starter. And coaches tune that out because they're in charge. That's their team. They have to do it. The Browns as an organization, by starting Deshaun Watson, does something different. It's much larger than a football decision. It puts back on the spotlight of a team that handed a guy one of the best contracts ever given to an NFL player. In fact, it is the best contract given to any player. It is the most guaranteed money. It is a large, large investment. And it was all of it guaranteed means that they were practically begging this guy to choose them over Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans, everybody else that was making a run for him. So it put them in a position to be beggars rather than, you know what, you want to get your NFL life back together, you can play here. So the Browns are heavily invested in this, and they're all in. They're all in. So there is in on this, and this Deshaun Watson mess is Deshaun Watson is. But because, again, we're such a football-crazy-oriented sports society, Deshaun Watson's play, even if it's just a series where he hands the ball off twice and throws an incomplete pass, is still going to be front and center news. What else are we going to do this preseason? Let's be honest. What else do we look for in preseason? We look for exactly what the Cleveland Browns are going to do. Start their starting quarterback. How many of them are going to be starting this weekend or starting tonight? There's 2 games on tap tonight, and then it runs all the way through Sunday. How many teams are going to have their starters play tonight? There'll be a few, but not a lot. But one of them, Friday night, one of them is going to be Cleveland. And by the way, that guy they're starting is the most controversial guy in the sport right now. And he's facing a year-long suspension, depending on how Peter Harvey judges. I think it's a terrible PR look. Is it a smart football look? You can even debate that. That in the end, you got an investment like this? But at the same time, always remember this season. They're only paying him $1 million. Everything else comes later. His salary was structured for the minimal impact that you could have in a suspension. Remember when Sue Robinson's decision came down? How many people did the math? Oh, it's like $300,000, right? So even if he breaks an ankle or whatever could happen in those series, however long he's playing. And I doubt he even gets hurt, because I don't even think they're going to put him in a real position. To, you know, if you're going to throw, throw quick. In the end, it's just a bad look. It's a bad look. But if you're all in, you might as well be all in, and the Browns are all in. All right, we'll talk Mets next.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Rosemarie on Twitter, that is for you. Pearl Jam, we got it in on our Throwback Thursday. 1991, John Daly winning the PGA Championship at Crooked Stick in Indiana. We got to talk New York Mets baseball. They are red, red hot right now. Mike Puma joins us on the New York Post on a progressive guest line. How are you, Mike?
Good. How you doing this morning?
Mike, I've covered, I've been around a few cities, but I've never been in a city that has had two Major League Baseball teams vying for ink, vying for space, vying for the kind of attention. What has it been like with the Yankees, as good as they are but struggling, and the Mets, who have become this big national story about how good they're playing?
Yeah, it's kind of a throwback, something we haven't had much of around here in recent years. You know, the Yankees are, you know, pretty good every year, but the Mets have been down so much over the last, decade and a half or so. So this is kind of a little bit different to have both teams, and certainly, you know, to have both teams on top like this. And, until last week, the Yankees had the best record in the American League, and now here come the Mets charging just behind the Dodgers for the best record in the National League. So it's exciting here, and, you know, you have people, maybe some people dreaming of a Subway Series.
We have talked about this a couple of times on this show, about the influence of managers, and sometimes it's emphasized maybe a little too much, maybe not as much. With the Mets, is there a Buck Showalter feel to this team, or is it just, hey, we've got talented players and they're just playing?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, but, I think Showalter is certainly taking this thing to the next level. From the first day of spring training, he brought a credibility to that clubhouse. Players knew the name Buck Showalter. They know he's had success building teams throughout his career. So, this mix of players they have here is something special, but Showalter is kind of the cherry on top that helps take it to the next level.
What makes this team offensively, let's just stick with that before we get to pitching and defense, offensively, people talk about their depth, people talk about getting hits in different areas of the lineup. What is it about their offense that has been so productive? Is it really depth? I mean, is it really as simple as that, or is there a little bit more?
It's such a long lineup, other than the catcher position, and even that, they've gotten increased production lately from Tomas Nito specifically. But it's a long line. There's no easy outs, and these guys grind at bats. They make pitchers throw a lot of pitches. They get opposing starting pitchers out of the game early. So, it's not a big home run hitting team. They get their walks. They're very good on base percentage team, and it's a team that's come through with those runners on base, hitting well with runners in scoring position.
Now let's get to the pitching. Jacob deGrom just came back, took a perfect game into the sixth inning. There was a 13-month period of time between his last appearance in the majors until when he just recently came back. That's a long time. What was the process like for him going through the rehab, going through the minors, to a point where he comes back and it doesn't feel like he's missing a beat, at least from the outside in?
Yeah, I mean, with his latest injury, which was a stress reaction on his scapula, they were very patient with him. They were going to make sure that when he came back, he was ready. So, initially I think there was some thought we might see Jacob deGrom in early June. They decided, we're gonna take our time here with him, and June became July, and ultimately became August. But the goal was to make sure when you got Jacob deGrom back, that he didn't have a step backward and have to go back on the injured list. So, and the thing that made it work was the way the rest of this rotation stepped up in his absence, and it didn't get to a point where it was like, oh, we really need Jacob DeGrom right now. The rotation was doing its thing, carrying the weight, and DeGrom's return's been an added bonus.
Give us an idea, and again, for those of us who live in markets that there's just one team that everybody roots for, tell us about this Subway Series that happens, like just happened not that long ago, where they played these two games at Citi Field. Did the Mets treat it differently than the Yankees treated it?
I don't think the players treat it differently. You know, the fans, it's really the fans who get into it and treat it as a big deal. And they had two games at Citi Field a couple of weeks ago, and the Mets won both of them. Now they'll go back to the Bronx, to Yankee Stadium, in about 2 weeks, and they'll play two more games over there at Yankee Stadium. It's a good time for the fans to shout at each other and chant about the other team. I think the players get energized a little more by the electricity that the fans bring. But as far as playing the Yankees, playing the Mets, I don't think that factors into how they view it.
In terms of the way this team has been built, they've had good players before. They've gone after big free agents before. They're a big spending team. But are they finding the right combination? What is working that hasn't worked in years past with different kind of players?
Well, you look at what some of the players they brought in through free agency last winter, and it was a Starling Marte. It was a Mark Canha. It was a Eduardo Escobar. It wasn't the bigger names. I think the fans were clamoring for them to go out to get Chris Bryant or Kyle Schwarber, two of the bigger free agent names out there. And the Mets kind of resisted going that direction. They had an approach they wanted to go in the lineup for some of these veteran presence guys who see, and what we just talked about, guys who kind of grind at bats, guys who work the opposing pitcher, get on base. So that's kind of the philosophy they took last offseason. Then, from the pitching front, going out and getting a stud like Max Scherzer, who was, the best available free agent arm on the market. So, Steve Cohen, he's worth $18 billion, whatever the number is now. He's not afraid to spend that money to improve the team. They took a smart approach here in the way they built it.
All right, so this might sound like a simple question, but I know it has everything to do with looseness and comfortability. This team, nationally, there's a buzz now. It seems like they're having fun. We're seeing them the narco music, and everybody's dancing. Is the team having fun? Is the team loose?
I think it's been a loose team since the beginning here. A guy like Francisco Lindor, and that clubhouse helps keep everybody loose. A guy like Marte who came over is a guy who keeps the. I think from the beginning it's been a fun group, and obviously with the winning comes more fun. But I don't think they flipped the switch at any point here. I think this is just kind of who they are.
I want to get to Diaz. We've been talking about it. I know a lot of other people around the country have been talking about it. When did this come about? This music, these trumpets, this dancing in the stands, this over enthusiasm. Has it always been there, and we're just catching it, or is it recent? Where did this come from? Because it's fun, man. It just to see it from the outside, it looks like a blast.
Yeah, and that's been his entrance music for a few years now.
We're just now joining the party. Those of us like me live in Nashville, just joining in now. That's awesome.
I think people are starting to recognize now too. The team is so good, and Diaz has emerged here as the best closer in baseball. He's had some up and down seasons with the Mets his first 3 years here. So now when he comes in, it's been lights out. You look at a guy who's averaging two strikeouts an inning here. It's amazing. So, yeah, I think the rest of the country is just catching on now because of how good Diaz has become.
It's fantastic. Mike Puma again, New York Post on the Mets. Really, really fun team right now. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for giving us a little insight as we head to the stretch run of the rest of the season. Hope to catch up with you soon.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Again, Mike Puma, New York Post on the Mets. Red hot right now. They are flying. And really, this did start, to be honest with you, it started, if you really want to look back, go back to the end of July, towards the end of July, like the 23rd, 24th or so. It's when they played the Yankees in those two games. And he's probably right with the players, right? The players play and whatever, right? They play, and if they win, they lose. Yankees seem to downplay the two losses at Citi Field, whereas, you know, you got a guy like Eduardo Escobar hitting a two-run home run in one of the wins against the Yankees, saying it was like a World Series home run. But I think for the most part, you play the schedule, and the fans get kind of swept up in it, but you got to kind of keep a level head about it. But it, just the feeling that you were getting out of Citi Field was, here is this Met fan base was just electric to take these two games against the Yankees. Now it has started this a really amazing run. If you go back to July 23rd, 24th, right, the Yankees were in a position. They weren't just battling the Astros for the best record in the American League, which is what they're doing now. They were battling the Dodgers for the best record in all of baseball, right? They were 65 wins, and the Mets were not that far behind, but far enough. Now look where we are now, a couple of weeks later. The Mets, they've been a mess. I mean, the Yankees have been a mess. They're 6-10 in their last 16 games. And the Mets are 15-2. They're 15-2. And now they've got the second-best record in the National League. They've got a better record than their crosstown rivals. Again, the national media has been focusing on the fun nature of this sport. And I said this earlier. I think there's something to look at in terms of the difference between the two organizations right now is that, yeah, the Yankees showed so much of what they were. They were a power team. They got a very powerful lineup, and they got good pitching, really good pitching. So the disappointment of this last few weeks, right, going on the road, getting swept by St. Louis, losing 2 of 3 in Seattle, losing 2 of 3 to Seattle at home before they went out on the road, right, is because the expectations were so high, you set them, and now we want you to hold on to that. So now we're looking at you with disappointment. And on the flip side, the Mets have been so Metsy over the last couple of years, making a mistake here, making a mistake there, batting out of order here, whatever. And now it's not that. It is guys having fun, guys producing. Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, he brought all these guys in that are in that lineup. Starling Marte, who we mentioned, plus Max Scherzer is on the mound. You got Carlos Carrasco is pitching well. Chris Bassett pitched well the other night. Jacob DeGrom is back into that rotation. So now you've got a team that's fun. They're young. They're exciting. You've got Edwin Diaz coming out to this music. Everybody's dancing. Compare and contrast that to a Yankee fan just looking at the team going, why aren't you winning more? Why aren't you playing better? I want you to play better. Why can't? It's not a fun time as a Yankee fan right now, and it's a blast to be on the flip side to be a Mets fan. But it's August. And when we get to October, that's when this stuff is going to start to matter. Fun teams going into the postseason can get caught up a little bit and lose. And next thing you know, the fun times are over. And teams that have gone through struggles like the Yankees are going through right now can get their act together and get back into the postseason and make a run and win a World Series. So today, the Mets are a big story, not just because of what's going on in the city, but again, they're making huge nationals. Like I said, he said that's been his entrance music for years. I just noticed it because I don't live in New York. I don't see it on a nightly basis. But it wouldn't matter what anybody's entrance music is or anybody's walk-up song is or anything like that if the team stinks or the team's not relevant. When you get these kind of stories where people are putting on putting it on social media for you to watch and follow, it's because there's relevance. Right, they just got done a series with the hard-charging world champion Atlanta Braves, and Diaz came into the game and mowed down their best hitters. So here comes the tweet, and everybody goes, oh my God, that's pretty awesome. Look at them. They're having a great time. Look at that. And now the national media is caught up. Not just me, but a lot of shows outside the New York area are finally going, unbelievable, that's so much fun. But people in New York City feel, people who have gone to games, they've known it this whole time. All right, we'll come back, wrap up this hour. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue up, wrapping up this hour. Thanks to Mike Puma in New York on the Mets. Carolina Panthers on the clock as we are reviewing them. Man, 1991, was it sappy? I mean, it feels like every song was sappy. Yeah,
a lot of sappy songs.
Ugh. Were these guys that desperate for girls writing these crappy songs?
No, you know what it was? It was that era of, you know, every metal band had to produce a ballad.
They did.
And that's what makes me laugh about this song, was because this song, this is arguably their most famous song.
Yeah, I agree. Exactly.
You know, they had a bunch of other hits, they're like hard head-banging hits, and this is what they're known for.
I remember my brother in the late 80s had an album called White Lion, the best of White Lion, and I'm like, they already have a greatest hits album. I was like, I thought they had one hit. Is that, does that play over and over on the CD?
Yeah, how much did you spend on that one song?
Exactly. Good Lord. My God. Oh, goodness. 1991, Throwback Thursday, John Daly wins the PGA Championship. The rest is history. John Daly's been in our life now for 31 years.
Yep.
God bless him.
Smoking heaters, drinking beers, and hanging out at Hooters outside of Augusta National.
By the way, four teams, but two groups are going to be joint practicing today. Dallas is in Denver for a joint practice with the Broncos, and Miami's in Tampa for a joint practice with the Buccaneers. I hate joint practice.
Yeah, who's fighting?
I know. That's the only thing that comes out of these things. They should ban this. I swear. Tell me what good it is to bring two teams together and have them do a joint practice in boiling heat. What do you think is going to happen? Like, isn't it inevitable that somebody gets into a fight and starts punching? Don't stop doing this. If you can't just run practice with your own group to get ready for this, you don't need a joint practice. That's stupid. Absolutely stupid. You're not going to show anything. You're not going to do anything. So what are we doing this for? You don't have to do it. All you're in for is tomorrow we'll talk about what Dallas Cowboy punched another Denver Bronco or what Dolphin punched a Buccaneer. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.